I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thanks for joining us for the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Anton taking your questions and calls this morning. The number 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. One of our listeners says, Ton, could you please repeat again the height the grass should be on the last mow of the season?
Around an inch and a half. So it's not like you need to get your ruler out, but we generally recommend, USU generally recommends people mow at a height of 2.5 to 3 inches. And so you reduce your mower deck down to about half of what you normally would do.
Next person wants to know, how do they protect their hardy hibiscus in large pots to survive the winter?
They're going to need them to bring them into an unheated shed or unheated garage and keep them moist through the winter. You don't want to drown them, but they can't be allowed to get bone dry. Put them back out in mid-May or late April, because they're not really going to break dormancy super early. And so you may even put them out in early April to keep them dormant, because you don't want them trying to grow in your dark garage. So put them out in early April, let them adjust to the season, keep them watered, and they will come up sometime in mid-May when they want to, but then they grow like crazy.
Next person says they live in Salt Lake. They planted a river birch in their park strip. They're wondering about fertilizer and pruning. And also, does it need more water than usual?
It's not that it needs more water than usual, but it's not drought hardy. And so if you were installing a low water use area in your yard, the last tree you would want to use, or one of them, would be a birch, because they can't be in dry soil for extended periods of time.
Okay, next listener says they had two flowering plum bushes that suddenly dried up branch by branch in the summer. They checked them, they checked the watering, the fertilizer, they died anyway. Now, they're wondering, though, they want to replace these, and one of them had some sticky sawdust-looking stuff in the ground, and they want to make sure that they don't transmit any sort of disease to any new plants. So what are your suggestions?
Sounds like peach tree borer got them. And flowering plums are not long-lived trees. You'll usually get anywhere from 20 or 25 years to maybe 40 at the most out of one in the landscape.
They have them 7, so.
Yeah, so the Royal Raindrops crabapple we covered in the first hour would be the first tree I'd look at if they want a burgundy-colored tree that will have some longevity.
Okay, and you can go to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page and find an entire article about that. Next person wants to some suggestions about battling aphids on houseplants, specifically hibiscus.
Well, I would quarantine the hibiscus. And you can fight and fight those things, but it may be they need to find a systemic registered for indoor use and use a systemic to get rid of them. Because, you know, the soaps and oils will keep them in check, but you don't want to move that hibiscus around other houseplants and have the aphid spread to all your other plants.
Hmm. Next question is, this person has harvested several of their banana squash, but they still have a few where the rind hasn't hardened and they can't make an indent with their fingernail. The vine, though, however, has pretty much died down. Will these harden off so they can store them, or can they harvest them and eat them now?
I would turn them into compost.
Oh,
so it's just they're not going to ripen. If they haven't ripened and the vines are dead, they'll just sit and rot. So they need to be more mature. And, you know, if they're not ripe, they never will.
All right. How do you successfully prepare hydrangeas for winter?
Don't prune them back like crazy and just hope for the best. Depending on the species, we can grow 3 or 4 different species quite successfully. And the one that we can't is that mophead hydrangea, the blue and the purple. And that one blooms off one-year-old wood. So don't do any pruning. You can deadhead them, but just leave them alone.
Next texter has sent me a picture, an image, and I need to say that we cannot receive on our text line. It's not like your cell phone So you cannot send us images. So if you do have an image and you want us to answer a question, please go to the KSL Greenhouse Facebook page and send us a message on Messenger. And Ton would be happy to take a look at what you've got and answer your question. Next person is asking, do butterfly bushes need to be cut down in the fall?
You can, but I prefer to wait for spring, just in case we get a really hard winter and they're killed, you know, severely. More foliage in there is a little better. But in the spring, you would cut those down, depending on the size, anywhere from 6 inches to 18 inches off the ground. That'll keep them more compact and make them bloom a lot more because they bloom off new wood.
Okay. A next person is asking about an Italian plum tree where the leaves are curling and spotted. They started seeing this 2 years ago. The fruit seems to be smaller as well. It's only watered by the lawn sprinklers, and they're wondering what you think about that.
Well, Italian prunes and plums are disease susceptible, and you rarely see one over about 20 or 25 years old, and they do get a disease in them that I see them, the leaves curling, they're dying a limited time, and so that is a possibility. The other thing they need to check for is there's an aphid that will get on plums this time of year, and it's a purple color. And when you wipe it on your, you know, like if you go grab the branch and you pull your hand away, you would think you had blood all over your hand. And so there, this aphid needs to be checked for because it could be causing it. But if they find no aphids, then there's most likely a fungal disease or maybe a nutrient deficiency. But if it's fungal disease, there's really not much they're going to be able to do about it.
All right. Next person has a weeping cherry tree, which sends as many branches up as down. They want to know when and how do they cut those out. It's about 10 plus years old, about 5 foot high. The branches are always are on the ground.
What species was it again?
So it's a weeping cherry.
Oh, okay. So they're going to go in and they don't just want to give it a haircut and make an umbrella out of it. Because what will happen is the new branches come out, they go sideways, and they try to go up, and then they go down. And so you'll have a step, like a weird-shaped mm-hmm. step in that. And so what you would need to do is every spring, when it's done blooming, is go in, and the branches that are getting low, cut them at different heights in the tree, some up higher, some down lower, to keep a more uniform look.
Okay. Next person's purchased some seedling pine or fir trees. How do they plant them and how much water, fertilization?
Get them in the ground now because they, unless they want to pot them and somehow try to overwinter them, I would just get them in the ground. And what I would do is just space them every 18 inches, like in a garden area or something, and let them go for the winter. And in the spring, they could maybe redig them. And when I would say like in March and plant them where they need to, but it's not an easy time of year to try to be overwintering seedlings.
Next one is a question about blackberries. This person lives in Logan. They've had a great crop of blackberries. Their vines are like 12 feet long and these would be the fruiting for next year. They want to know when they can cut them back and they're worried that the snow might break them.
It could. The blackberries, they produce fruit off one-year-old vines. And so this year's new growth will be next year's fruit branches. So you don't want to let them go for years and years and then try to prune them, because what will happen is the fruiting wood gets more and more distant from the base. So what they would need to do is watch the new growth next year and keep it clipped back. And so they'd let it go until the 1st of July and then tip prune it. So they just cut the tip off, and that will force what are called laterals to come out. They would tip prune it again in the 1st of August. And that will keep the new growth closer in, and those older vines can come out. But any pruning, I would wait until up in the Cache Valley on blackberries to be around the 1st of April.
Okay. And let's take a break. The number to call, 801-575-8255. You can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.
Thanks for spending your Saturday morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Anton with you. Let's try to rush through these last questions and calls before we run out of time. Ton, next person is wondering whether there's a benefit to aerate and reseed grass right now for a lawn that has just a ton of weeds. They say this is a previously neglected rental that they're trying to get the weeds under control. What's your best advice for them?
It depends on the kinds of weeds. If they're broadleafed weeds like dandelions or bindweed, it would actually be to their benefit to spray the weeds out instead of just reseeding. Now, if they've got weedy grasses, it depending on the grass, they may be an advantage to, in the spring and fall, aerate and put more seed down, but it would take 3 or 4 years, and with proper care, they may be able to choke weedy grass out, but it just so much depends on the particular species.
Okay, let's go to Keith in Far West. Good morning, Keith. How can we help you?
Good morning. How are you guys?
Doing very well, thank you.
So every year we go gather the mums off the graves and I replant them. When's the best time to prune them, in the spring or the fall?
Once well, get them in the ground and let them photosynthesize. And when they get hit by hard enough frost, they'll turn brown. Go ahead and cut them back then.
Okay, yeah, so getting ready to bloom now, and that's when you do it, as soon as the first hard frost then?
Yeah, when they're killed back by hard frost. Now, the floral mums you're planting are sometimes not super cold hardy, and in planting them in the fall, you'll probably have about a 50 to 70% success rate, but a number of them don't make it because they've put everything they had into making flowers and they're not making a lot of roots right now. And so you may lose some of them, but I compliment you on trying to reuse them.
No, yeah, we plant it, but I go gather them up in May and replant them then.
They
die. Like you said, I'm getting about a 70% success rate.
Good. Good.
All right.
Okay, well, thank you, sir. That helped.
Thanks for your call this morning. Listener Ellen from Kearns has black and red currant bushes. In the last few years, they've been plagued with some smaller variety of aphids. She says the leaves curl up and they turn rust in color. She says if she cuts the bushes down, will that get rid of them for next year, or how should she get rid of them?
Unless she has found the aphids on there and they are seeing the leaf curl and things, I would maybe take some samples into their extension office and see. Be sure that that's actually aphids causing the problems. There are a few diseases out there that they can get that would be a rust disease that actually could be causing the problem. Now, if it is aphids, I don't know, because they're kind of a minor crop, that they would find a systemic register to kill them if they've been dealing with them for years. And so they may need to turn to something like neem oil or horticultural soap, or maybe something a little stronger, at least for an initial spray, to see if they can knock them back that way if they do confirm that it is aphids.
All right, let's take a call from Frank in West Valley. Good morning, Frank.
Good morning.
What is your question?
Well, I have, I want to plant a peach tree, and whether I should get a dwarf or not is one question. And number two, when should I buy it and put it in? And also,
go ahead.
How come all of my tomatoes, for instance, cantaloupe and that kind of thing, were all real small this year?
Well, let's focus on the peach first, just because we're running a little short on time, and that's the quicker one to answer.
Yeah.
You're not going to find a peach this time of year to plant, most likely. However, the semi-dwarf ones, if you can find them, are just less vigorous, and if you don't have room, they can be to your advantage, but being less vigorous, they may be a little more susceptible and less able to recover from frost damage or borer damage. And so conventional wisdom among a lot of like old school hardcore fruit growers is to plant the standard ones, or maybe semi-dwarf, that are more vigorous, so that if you get some problems with them, the tree can recover.
And now we're in spring.
You're not going to find them
apparently.
Now. Spring is going to be when? And so why is everything else small? If you consistently have multiple species with small fruit on them, or, you know, the fruiting vegetables of what we call them, it's usually a cultural problem, a lack of nutrients or too much salt in the soil or too little water maybe to where they're alive but not producing big fruit. So those would be things that I would explore, because there isn't any one disease that causes multiple species across the board to have small fruit on them.
Yeah, I know water isn't the problem. It's just like my lemon boys, early girls, everything was about the size of a golf ball.
So you may just send a soil sample off this fall to BYU or USU and have your soil tested to make sure that there's no problems. And if they come back as normal, then it may have been something cultural or, there are some diseases that might do that. But I would start with a soil test.
Okay. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
All right, Frank, thanks for your call this morning. The next person has been trying to grow a red oak acorn. They've been growing this from a kit. They got it as a memorial gift. It's about 10 inches tall with about 8 leaves, and they want to know what they should do to protect it or what they should do for it for the winter.
I would keep it indoors for now, and if they want to have it go dormant, then just put it into an unheated garage or something.
Okay,
and just
it looks
keep it
like
watered.
They've already planted it. It's already planted outside.
Okay. They're going to have to hope for the best. Maybe put a bamboo stake next to it, just a thin bamboo stake, and loosely wire the, or, you know, use horticultural wire or something, you know, even zip ties to just kit that so it doesn't blow over. Mm-hmm. And then just go from there. Red oaks, some can oftentimes get iron chlorosis. And so in the future, as it gets established, it may need supplemental iron.
All right. Next person wants to know if they should dig up their potatoes or keep them in the ground.
Dig them up. They will not survive in the ground. They need to be cured for a while, you know, for a week or so, to get the skins hardened at around 70 degrees, and then you store them at around 50 or so degrees to maximize their longevity. But if you leave them in the ground, if the ground gets cold, they're not going to be edible.
Is it okay to divide and replant peonies now? And if so, what precautions should they take?
They need to wait until the peonies are dormant. So I'd give it until late October, early November. And I would look up a YouTube video on dividing peonies, because a lot of times we have a tendency to bury them too deeply and they just struggle from there on out. And so there's several YouTube videos on dividing peonies, and I would take a look at one of those just to get a visual.
All right, that's it for us. That's it for the Greenhouse Show. We'll be back next Saturday from 8 to 11. Make sure you go to the Greenhouse Facebook page. Check out our fun videos on succulent centerpieces for your pumpkins, as well as all of the other great articles that we've posted today. Have a great weekend, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear-gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby?
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.